extreme radio for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. I'd like to welcome you in right now. If you're driving around listening to AM 640, or if you're maybe at work listening via the AM 640 app, picking up the show there, I welcome you in too. Or if you're listening to me right now on Shaw Direct on channel 865, I welcome you in also. Or maybe you're checking me out on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software. I welcome you in. By the way, the fastest growing way to catch the show. And maybe you're, what some call, sitting in the best seat in the house. Logged onto your Mac or your PC at home. Logged onto AM640's website, 640toronto.com. Picking up the live audio streaming there. I welcome you in. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. Did you catch it? The Antichrist prototype ritual hidden in plain view all this week. This week, and all week long, it seems, the Illuminati-controlled mass media have been filled with references to the coming Antichrist. You're going, what? First, it began with the death of Muhammad Ali. The greatest of them all, as it's been called, over and over and over again by all the elites all week long, all the way from the highest ranking politicians, the highest ranking business leaders in the world, heaping praise on this man, the greatest of them all, Muhammad Ali, as well as all the sportsmen who paid homage and tribute to him all week. With billions of Illuminati-controlled mass media screens, with people peering into them around the world, carrying those images of Muhammad Ali being treated as if he was a god. Because he was known all over the world in boxing as a god, and all over the physical world, too, as one of the greatest civil rights champions ever. A god known globally around the world. You can't go anywhere in the world, anywhere, where Muhammad Ali isn't well known. So he does qualify as the Antichrist prototype. Because the Illuminati don't do anything that is not global. Their global events must have a message. And it must be something that affects the entire globe, too. And the reason for that is the great work, as they call it. This penchant, this desire, this driving power towards a one-world government led by just one person. A goal which they cannot wait to accomplish, by the way, as things are really starting to speed up faster and faster than ever before. The death of Muhammad Ali was merely, really, a ritual to promote and herald the coming of the real one who's going to claim that he is the greatest of all time. And it will be the Antichrist. There have been many, many Antichrist prototypes through the millennia, all staged to point to, lead up to, getting the world ready for the coming of this person, the Antichrist they simply call the One. This latest Antichrist prototype, Muhammad Ali, even died in a place that it is inextricably connected to the Antichrist and the New World Order. Muhammad Ali died Friday at a Phoenix area hospital a week ago, where he had spent the last few days. The Phoenix conjured up for all to see as the death place. To the Illuminati, the occultic symbol of the Phoenix bird, also known as the Bennu, is symbolic of the various empires that have ruled the world in each of their time in history. The Phoenix bird is one of the oldest occult symbols in the world. The Phoenix mystical bird is a major Illuminati symbol for the Antichrist. The Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, then the Roman Empire, then the British Empire, and today's crumbling American Empire. The next one will be the final empire the world ever sees, with no borders for the globe and one leader, a one-world government. The story of the Phoenix has its origins in ancient Egypt, and the mystery religion, of course, which is taken from the legend of Hermes. The Phoenix is said to rise out of the flames and ashes of its own immolation, its own burning death, and lives again. The Phoenix is said to rise out of the flames and ashes of its own burning death. The Phoenix was a symbol that was sacred to the sun, and the length of its life, approximately 500 to 1,000 or more years, was taken as a standard for measuring the length of the motion of the heavenly planets and stars above, and all the cycles of time that are used in the ancient Egyptian mystery religion to designate the periods of existence for the empires. So you see, our futures written in the stars, and when they're aligned, nothing holds it back. That's what we're to believe. No one seems to know just what the Phoenix ate to sustain itself for up to 1,000 years, but some researchers of this subject believe that it actually could have existed on the atmosphere alone. Others believe that it did eat occasionally, but never in the presence of man. Today's Freemasons do know the special Masonic significance of the Phoenix bird, because the bird's described in Masonic doctrine as using sprigs of acacia in the making of its nest. Why acacia, you might wonder, and what significance does it actually have? The acacia tree was the very tree where the coffin of Osiris was lodged in the myth, when found by Isis, his sister and wife. The story goes that the coffin of Osiris, the Egyptian mystery religion's first sun god, his golden coffin, bespeckled with jewels, was thrown into the river, but got caught up in Echinacea tree, and that's how Isis found it. Muhammad Ali was the Antichrist prototype, the greatest of them all. I've got that proven for you in his various quotes, and they're next on Talk Radio AM 640. It's a Spaceman and a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640, and I'm just getting started. I'm a Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. The only way you and I will communicate together, besides this microphone. Now, as I said before in the opening, Muhammad Ali was an Antichrist prototype. His entire career was birthed at the 1960 Olympiad, Summer Olympics, where he won 3 gold medals for boxing. And it started from there. And as you know, Olympians are, yes, gods. Muhammad Ali was that Antichrist prototype that they have coming around every once in a while to promote the idea of the coming one. Here's Muhammad Ali in his own words, saying he is the God. He said once, I'm not the greatest. I'm the double greatest. Not only knock them out, I pick the round. And this one. I'm the greatest thing that ever lived. I'm the king of the world. I'm a bad man, and I'm the prettiest thing that ever lived. Another one. It's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am. This just fascinated the world. Absolutely blew them away. He was not eloquent. He was proud, bodacious, and he, well, backed up what he said. If you can do it, it ain't bragging, was one of his lines. Now, as the coming Antichrist will be both good and evil, he can kill you or heap rewards on you. He can make or break you, the coming Antichrist. It was the same way with Muhammad Ali. And that's the way the world saw him, both good and evil. Listen, here's Ali, a quote from his own words again, about what he does for a living. It's just a job. Grass grows, birds fly, waves pound the sand. I beat people up. So here's the well-loved man who went around as a goodwill ambassador, a wonderful Muslim who pled conscientious objector, would not fight in the Vietnam War. They threatened to put him in jail. He escaped that, and he stood for what he believed in, and he won. But he beat people up for a living, doing both good and harm. On racism in America, Muhammad Ali said, boxing is a lot of white men watching two black men beat each other up. Ali also said this after he beat Sonny Liston in 1964 to win his first ever heavyweight title. And, of course, he was the first one that brought speed into the world heavyweight division, simply because in the old days, the two biggest men just stood in the center of the ring and slugged it out for as many rounds as they could take. This man did not do that. He brought speed and incredible intricate footwork into the ring at the heavyweight level. That's what made him what he calls, and everybody else has called for the past week, the greatest. So after he beat Sonny Liston for his first title in 64, he said, I am the greatest. I'm the greatest to ever lived. I don't have a mark on my face. The God of the Illuminati, Lucifer, is the father of the idea of a dare, okay? You know, the daredevil connection, the risking of something very precious over something totally insignificant, a dare. Something the evil one loves to do. Now here's a quote from that very thing on the dare from Muhammad Ali. Impossible is just a big word thrown around by small men who find it easier to live in a world they've been given than to explore the power they have to change it. Impossible is not a fact. It's an opinion. Impossible is not a declaration. It's a dare. Impossible is potential. Impossible is temporary. Impossible is nothing. And I'll end the quote there. As Muhammad Ali's life came to an end. Used by the Illuminati in the Illuminati-controlled mass media this week as a prototype of the Antichrist when all was said and done. And just look at how the week ended. It ended with literally a bang. Last night, Friday night, concert, Orlando, Florida. Christina Grimmie, the American songwriter and singer, best known for appearing on a show called The Voice, the American reality TV show, singing competition broadcast on NBC. She was shot by a fan last night after signing autographs after her performance and died earlier today, the 11th of June, 11. The number of destruction. She was 22, a double 11. Grimmie was shot, given the royal treatment, shot three times, that magical number, while signing autographs after she did her performance. She did the warm-up for another band that, of course, was the headliner on that bill. And you will never guess the name of that act. They're a rock, pop, punk band from Florida. They're called Before You Exit. The person who pulled the trigger and forced Christina Grimmie to exit this third dimension, this fourth into the fourth dimension, himself was tackled by Grimmie's brother as he shot. The brother Mark, we're told. Right now, that's all we know. A 27-year-old, of course, a 27-year-old, the number 9, Satan's favorite number, right there. And as all patsies do in these blood sacrifices, kill themselves after the job because dead men tell no tales. If they're accosted at all, they are taught, programmed to hit the delete button for themselves. Because you see, the killer of Christina Grimmie did not shoot Mark, the brother who tackled him, to try and stop him from going farther or getting away. He shot himself. Why was Christina Grimmie singled out as the blood sacrifice, you might ask? Well, then you don't know who Christina Grimmie is. In many of Christina's videos and interviews, she has identified herself overtly as a Christian. She even had Christ in her first name, Christine, and the last name, Grimmie. Grim Christ. How blatant is that? As well as the fact that she promoted her religion of Christianity in many of her interviews, many of her videos. So the death, all this week, has been associated with a very, very high-profile, publicly proclaimed believer in Islam, that being, of course, Muhammad Ali. He even changed his name from his real name, Cassius Clay, to the Muslim name he's famously known for. Saying this on changing his name to his Muslim name of Muhammad Ali shortly after he defeated Sonny Liston to win that first heavyweight title in February of 64, Cassius Clay stood up in the face of the world and said he had changed his name to Muhammad Ali. And his words, Cassius Clay is a slave name. I didn't choose it. I didn't want it. I am Muhammad Ali, a free name, and I insist people use it when speaking to me and of me. He was adamant about Islam. So one of the greatest Muslims died, as well as the self-professed Christian, Christina Grimmie. in a dramatic fashion to gain, of course, the world's spotlight attention. How often do fans kill the stars they go to see? This was a blood ritual sacrifice. The message? Islam, and Muhammad Ali representing it. And Christianity, Christina Grimmie representing that. Those two religions will die, but the Antichrist bloodline will live on. The phoenix will rise again. That when I return. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. More next. I got to call Space. It's a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. DB writes, yeah, they're trying to show that man can be God through Muhammad Ali. And this one, thanks for setting me straight about Ali. I was one to get caught up in the romance of it. Feeling weird, though, knowing you might have something to say. And we have to stress that Ali is not to be pointed at, but the shadow government that is using him. Love what you do. He's absolutely right about that. Where this emailer, A.S., got part of my message but did not get it all. And maybe I did not explain myself as well as I could have. He writes, Space, Muhammad Ali was a very devout Muslim. The Antichrist doesn't believe in religion. Oh, yes, he does. He believes in Luciferianism. Yes, he does. And he goes on to say, have we lost our mind? Or are you just out of ideas on what else to talk about? Signed, A.S. No, there are people that are used, you know, that have no idea they're being used. They're total patsies. Have no idea of the deeper message. But I tell you now, Muhammad Ali was a god to the world. They made him that way. The Illuminati-controlled mass media made him that way. He supplied all the right actions and all the right words. And Christina Grimmie, who goes out in a dramatic fashion, very rare to be killed after a concert performance and you're signing autographs. I mean, it stuck out so large, and it happened right at the end when the Ali thing all wrapped up, and then the day was dedicated to that feel-good story that I'm going to get to next. But I want to say this. Muhammad Ali represents Islam as that greatest man in the world. And he died, just as the Illuminati are going to kill Islam, and they're going to kill Christianity, as Christina Grimmie, Christ Grimm in the name, as she is killed at the end of this tumultuous week, in the strangest, craziest, insane way. Yes, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are going to be blamed for all the troubles of the world since the earliest of days, and will be outlawed by the coming Luciferian Antichrist. Because he is religious. He's religious about himself. He will be called God, with Lucifer possessing him at the halfway point of his reign. So after all of that death of that religion, Islam, Christianity, death of the week, it was followed by the feel-good pomp and pageantry and the beauty, really, of Queen Elizabeth II's 90th birthday celebration, the second one this year, known as the People's Celebration. You see, they thought April, on her real birthday, It really is a little too chilly, and it could be inclement weather for people to come out and celebrate the Queen's birthday. So they moved it to the first or second weekend in June, all depending on the calendar. And it becomes a bank holiday celebration also. And you know about bank holidays. Bank holidays are, well, the banking cabal makes a lot of money on a banking holiday. Why is this good news story, the Queen and her second celebration of her birthday, a good news story coming at the conclusion of this week of mourning? I believe that there's a distinct possibility. Because, you see, they're trying to show you that Christianity, Islam, Judaism along with that, will die, but the Antichrist and his religion, Luciferianism, lives on in the rebirth of the Phoenix. And the progeny of Queen Elizabeth II's womb. Bloodline. Yes, I believe there's a distinct possibility that it will be from this particular royal family bloodline that now resides in Buckingham Palace that will be connected with the rise of the Antichrist. Let me give you some careful, sought-out research that leads me, compels me to believe this. The Antichrist's symbolic depiction in the stars above, and you know that the Illuminati believe that our destiny is written in the stars. The Antichrist's symbolic depiction is a bear in Bible prophecy, Revelation 13:2, Daniel 7:5, and again in Daniel 7:verse 24. The beast I saw, which arose from the sea, was like unto a leopard. Its feet were as a bear, the mouth of a lion, and behold, another beast like unto a bear. It raised up itself on one side, and had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. And a little horn arises. He shall subdue three kings. This vision and prophecy of the Antichrist is given by the angel Gabriel to the prophet Daniel, who cannot understand it. Therefore, the angel interprets. The angel then describes a bear who subdues three ribs, three kingdoms. Suggests that the Antichrist arrives in either warlike fashion, immediately putting down three kingdoms, or, possibly more peacefully, placing the three under his subjection or annexation. I believe, personally, myself, after checking the research, it will be a peaceful annexation with the three to be Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, unified into a future Anglo-Celtic nation which comes together in the future out of necessity and under the rule of a new King Arthur. As Arthur, you see, lived for a time when these nations were still unified. It's a Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. Back with more right after this. I'm the data call space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. And thanks for the ones that you've sent. I really appreciate it. J.A. from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada writes, Queen's birthday, her 90th, drop the zero, it becomes a nine. Coincidence? And he knows it's not. Now, as I was saying before the break, three kingdoms, I believe, will be won peacefully, fulfilling the scripture of Daniel 7:5 and Daniel 7:24. And those three kingdoms, I believe, are Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, unified into a future Anglo-Celtic nation, which comes together in the future out of necessity, as many of the changes on borders around this world are going to be. That's what Brexit is all about. It's about borders, getting rid of them. June 23rd, that comes up. That's going to be a big shake for everyone in the world, not just the EU. And in America, socialism has reared its ugly head, this time in mainstream parties. Obama, and everyone knows, he was more socialist than any other president that America has ever seen. And now, the Democrats have Bernie Sanders representing an even more pure form of socialism. Why? Because Canada is a socialist country, and I've talked many times about the financial shakeup, the gigantic financial shakeup that is about to take place. The next couple, 3 years are very pivotal for this, and I've talked many times about the information of a political and economic North American union involving Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. And with it, the little bit of socialism mixed into America, and a brand new currency as the U.S. dollar crashes. The euro dollar, your euro, there will be a North American union dollar. This is going to be part of the Illuminati-controlled global financial crisis, I believe, that was started in 2008. This mighty financial shakeup that's coming in the next couple, 3 years will involve a realignment of some EU member countries, too, as well as this Brexit vote that's coming up June 23rd. And there's going to be actually some countries later on that will be really expelled from the European Union due to their severe debt problems, and some other ones that will be coming on. They're talking about Georgia now, that is that demarcation zone marking the, well, the border between the West and the East with Russia and the European Union. Georgia is vying to become a member of, yes, the EU. I've talked many times about this. It's all coming. This mighty financial shakeup is going to facilitate it all. We're waiting for the American dollar to just bottom out and tank, because it's all inextricably tied to the U.S. dollar, as well as the rate increase that's coming at around the 14th, 15th next week, possibly from the Fed in the United States, which is directly connected to the yuan in China, where the Chinese want to devalue, keep it even lower, while America raises rates. It's an unfair playing field. There's a real argument going on right now between the Chinese leaders, the Western world, on how this is all going to play out. I believe a rate increase is coming, and very soon. I believe two this year, as a matter of fact. Now, the Eurozone are the countries who are privileged to use the euro. And this would also explain why in the future there are only going to be 10 European nations, finally, when it all concludes, in the EU, which will by then include Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, all united with England as one, from which the revived Roman Empire arises, as perhaps only 10 nations of Western Europe will actually survive this coming cash cataclysm. Interestingly enough, we're already seeing the Celtic nations of today feel the need to return to their common tribal roots as if beguiled to do so, as if heeding some unseen call to return to unity. All 10 of these conglomerate nations will soon be placed under the rule of the beast system. Given the increasing lies, false archaeology, of a linked ancestry through the continuing lost tribes of Israel research, as well as its own prophecies, it stands to reason and makes sense that these regional nations would in fact unite under a common banner in a future which is appointed for man-made destruction, who then join together and unite through convenience and because of economic necessity to ultimately form a 10-region area around the world. 10 regions. One is the North American Union region, North America. The second is Western Europe, the EU zone. Japan is the third of 10 regions around the world. Australia, South Africa, the rest of the market economy of the developed world is 4. Eastern Europe, including Russia, is the 5th. Latin America is the 6th. North Africa and the Middle East, the 7th area. The 8th area of the 10 economic region zone is tropical Africa. 9 is South and Southeast Asia. And finally, 10 is China. These 10 economic regions will be ruled by one leader each, 10 kings. Yet all reporting to the 11th king, the Antichrist, who owns it all and facilitates the 10 kings and their positions, the Antichrist being the 11th. If I'm correct, this means that the Antichrist first appears on the world scene almost immediately after having 3 nations loyal to him, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland, and rally in unison behind him, declaring him as their unified king. And with these 3, he eventually rises to power to take in 10 more loyal to his rule, for a total of 13, a number strongly connected with those involved with the Antichrist plan throughout the ages. Notice that it's the Archangel Gabriel who provides the interpretation of the vision to Daniel, stating that the little horn, another code word for the Antichrist, is also symbolized as a bear. In other words, the Antichrist is the bear. Remember, the ancient Celtic word for bear is Arthur. And the name Arthur literally means bear. Arcturus. Bear. Arthur, the Celtic word for bear. The brown bear's scientific name is Ursus arctos, which combines the Latin and Greek synonyms for its English name. Our word bear is from the Latin arctus, from Greek arcturos, arctos, meaning bear. It's also where the English word for Arctic, by the way, comes from. The book of Revelation provides a parallel, yet expanded view of the nature of the Antichrist, which is hauntingly familiar to Daniel's vision, and even adds a little something more. In it, you see the bear, the beast, is a 4-part creature, being a dragon, bear, leopard, and lion. Exactly the same creatures from Daniel's vision. But in Revelation, there are added features of the wild beast, who takes on more detailed attributes of a red dragon. From these, there is then a mystery to solve. It's a very different combined and merged beast, the lion slash leopard slash bear, which makes up the totality of the future Antichrist beast king. And believe me when I say, the Antichrist are going to follow the King James Version of the Bible to the letter, including this part in Revelation and this part that I just talked to you about that comes in Daniel's vision. It's also in Revelation. And it's also in Daniel. repeated. The book of Revelation provides a parallel. It's an expanded view of the Antichrist. More when I return on that. Because the beast is about to speak with great authority. Space back with more right after this break on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm going to dive and call Space. It's View from Space, Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com and space at 640toronto.com, the other one. I thank you so much for the one that you've sent. I really appreciate it. So I was saying before the break that there are descriptions of the Antichrist. Daniel's vision. The creatures in Daniel's vision. In Revelation, there are added features of the wild beast, who takes on more detailed attributes of a red dragon. And from these, you can see that there is a puzzle. And it's a very different combined and merged beast, this lion-leopard-bear mixture, described in Revelation and Daniel, which makes up the totality of the future Antichrist beast king that is soon to be here to come. I believe he is alive today and now. First, this beast speaks with great authority, as a roaring lion, as a king. The lion obviously represents the main symbol of the country this king will come from. England. The lion. Hey, they even call America the lion's whelp or pup. You know what I mean. The leopard speaks to his strength and youth. I don't see Prince Charles as king. The leopard says strength and youth. The dragon symbol tells you where he gets his true power from. Wales, of course, has the symbol of their flag of a red dragon. And there is a Prince of Wales, of which Prince Charles is a member. And there's not always a Prince of Wales. Now, while the bear reveals his name, you can see where he gets his power from. The dragon is, of course, Lucifer. England is, of course, too well known, and is well known to be represented by its national heraldic symbol of a lion. The dragon represents his power and coronation base, as in the red dragon, which is the, as I said, national symbol of Wales. The leopard can be interpreted as his heritage, even pointing to his lineal connection to the young Alexander the Great, who was himself, same bloodline, who was himself represented by the leopard because of his quick conquering of Asia Minor and Europe. What's very, very intriguing about that is that Prince William, the heir presumptive after the heir apparent, which is the next in line to the throne when Queen Elizabeth is gone. Prince Charles first, Prince William second. Prince William shares both his youth and the name of Philip, given to him by Prince William's Greek grandfather, who, by the way, yesterday turned 95 years old, Prince Philip. The Greek royal family. Alexander was tutored by Aristotle and succeeded his father, Philip II of Macedon, to the throne in 336 BC, after Philip II was assassinated and Alexander dies 13 years later, at the age of 32. Although both Alexander's reign and empire were short-lived, the cultural impact of his conquests lasted for centuries. Alexander was known to be undefeated in battle, and in those days was an Antichrist prototype, and is considered one of the most successful commanders of all time. He's one of the most famous figures of antiquity, and is remembered for his tactical ability, for his conquests, and for his speedy spreading of Greek culture into the East, marking the beginning of the Hellenistic civilization. He transformed the world, as it was known then. Arthur, as I've stated in Greek, Latin, and Celtic, means bear. What's even more interesting is that the Jews, not completely oblivious to the concept of a coming Antichrist figure, actually name him. And the name they give him even has the first two letters of his name correct, A-R. The Jews call the Antichrist Armillus. Although because they don't have the rest of the name correct, and because they don't include the New Testament Bible and Revelation prophecies into account, this means the Jewish people will still be deceived by the Antichrist King, A-R-R, as in Armillus, Arthur. The Illuminati are going to follow the King James version of the Bible to the letter, as I've said. And this book is everywhere, leaving signs not only of the Antichrist's name, where he will come from, who his parents are, what his name is, where he will go, and what he is to do in his epic destiny, which clearly spans across time and place to fulfill the fate which awaits him and those who follow him. For just one example, the King James Version of the Bible is using sixes, six sixes, and six six sixes, as well as the hellish fires of cities to connect London with Rome, Jerusalem, as well as the Antichrist beast itself with a current royal in line to the throne of England. For instance, it states the ancient Jewish temples, both the Temple of Solomon and the Temple of Herod, to be burned and destroyed upon the same exact day. In the Jewish calendar, both went up on the 9th of Av, albeit 656 years apart. Going back to 606 B.C., the King James Version of the Bible, God provided Daniel the prophecy detailing the destruction of the Second Temple, which was burnt to the ground and leveled by the Romans in 66 A.D. by Titus, a prince archetypal of the coming Antichrist. Again, another Antichrist prototype throughout the millennia that they've been doing this. 2 years before this event, in 64 A.D., was the infamous burning of Rome, which many believe was by the hand of yet another Antichrist archetype figure alluded to in prophecy, this time in the book of Revelation, Neron Caesar. Oh, you know him as Nero, who fiddled while Rome burned. That's about all people know about him. But adding these historical facts of Roman and Israelite history with British history, that is known, as it is known that Rome created London in the year 666 A.D. New settlements began to take root around settled areas of England. In 1066 was the famous Battle of Hastings, in which William the Conqueror, England's first foreign king, took London for himself and was coronated king at Westminster Abbey on Christmas, Mithras Day. The sun god, Mithras. That's who Christmas was actually and really celebrating. In 1666, the city of London burned to the ground, the same city which will give birth to the Antichrist. As the eldest son of Prince Charles, the current and 21st all-time Prince of Wales, the country with the dragon as its symbol, The next Prince of Wales, by the way, will be the 22nd Prince of Wales, a double 11. And Prince William is widely expected to ascend the throne of the United Kingdom and the 15 other realms of the British Commonwealth. Prince William's full name, William Arthur Philip Lewis. If Prince William were to use his first name, William, as his name to be king, he would be known as King William the Fifth, because William the Conqueror was the first, and there were four more to follow. Counting, if it's true that King William will choose his name. But William is free to use any one of his Christian names. More on that when I return after this break on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS. I'm a guy they call Space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. And thank you for the ones that you've sent me. I can't dwell on them too much tonight. The show's sold out, and I want to get everything jammed in that I can. So I was talking before the break about Prince William, if he was to be named king. He could pick William. That would make him King William the Fifth. But William is free to use any one of his names to become king. King Edward the Seventh and Queen Elizabeth's father, the last king of Ireland, by the way, who was named Albert Frederick Arthur George, but chose to become King George the Sixth. Now, both were known as Prince Albert before being crowned king. You'll notice that the Queen's father, King George the Sixth, also had the option to claim Arthur as his kingly name, but chose not to. I believe he knew it wasn't time. Were William, Prince William, to decide on any of the three names given him, Arthur, Philip, or Lewis, their usage would be the first for a regal name. Although Philip II of Spain was a king consort of England and Louis VIII of France was proclaimed King of England in London in 1216. The name of the semi-mythical King Arthur, if that is what Prince William might in fact decide to call himself, would certainly add to the legitimacy of both the legend and historical relevance to the one notoriously dubbed the once and future King Arthur. If you think about it, it can now be better interpreted that the Antichrist, well, becomes king while likely in his youth. And it's very much like his ancient ancestor, Alexander the Great, who himself is prophesied about by Daniel. Much to his surprise, he conquered most of the known world before the age of 25, did King Alexander, making youth a certain attribute of the future Antichrist. Yet his other attributes may contain something much more than just what's on the surface, as the entire symbology of his amalgamated beast form, lion, leopard, bear description may in fact be a code for the beast's names. The European Union, a revived Roman Empire of the modern era, that's what they are. When Israel was in effect reborn in May of 1948 through the United Nations, the precursor to the One World Government and Britain, were told Jews worldwide finally could return to their ancient homeland after 2,000 years. At the very same time, though, in the Northwest, were the European nations also rejoining together as if being reborn, following a secret society plan toward creating a new Holy Roman Empire, growing in parallel strength to the newly revived nation of Israel. This would begin with Belgium, Luxembourg, Netherlands, joining in an economic alliance. Then, brought into the fold, France, then Italy, then West Germany joining in 1957. Then under a deal that came out of the newly drafted Treaty of Rome, in 1972, three additional members signed on. England, Denmark, and Ireland. Then, January 1, 1981, Greece became the ratified 10th member of the EU. Now the King James Version of the Bible shows another interesting clue between Daniel and Revelation. Daniel clearly states that out of an original 10-nation grouping of nations would arise a little horn or young prince who'd become the beast of Revelation. The exact prophecy in the book of Daniel 7, chapter 7, verse 20, in reference to this prince, king, beast, states that I, meaning Daniel, considered the horns, and behold, there came up among the ten another little horn, and in this horn were the eyes of a man. In other words, after a ten-nation European confederacy was born, afterwards would arise a little horn, a human being who later becomes the Antichrist. So this 11th horn, having the eyes of a man, is not referring to an 11th country of the still reviving Roman Empire. But the King James Version of the New Testament is clearly telling you to look for a little man who suddenly appears after the ten. Just look at the precise timing here. Prince William was born the very next year, 1982, just months after the Greek community joined the EU and became the 10th member. Prince William's grandfather, Prince Philip, is of Greek royalty. And by 1990, a newly reunified Germany joined. And in 1993, the European Union was officially born, something not seen or realized since the days of the ancient Roman Empire itself. And yet, the King James Version of the Bible predicted it all. Or did it? Or could it be that this rejigged book printed by King James the First back in the ancient times is in fact a hidden in plain view blueprint of the Illuminati's plan for the Antichrist rising? Under James, the golden age of the Elizabethan literature and drama went into warp drive with writers like William Shakespeare, John Donne, Ben Jonson, Sir Francis Bacon, contributing to a flourishing literary culture. I believe it was Sir Francis Bacon who actually rejigged the biblical texts precisely to this end. The one who wrote The Coming Atlantis. Yes, today the European Union has very successfully grouped the ancient nations of Rome once more to form what will become the last world empire from which the Antichrist will come from. The dollar, the U.S. dollar trumping currency, will have its hands full with the euro, as well as the EU's newly ratified treaty term in office in Lisbon, entering into force, giving the president a longer term in office in the EU, and giving him the powers of a superstate, much like the United States of America has had for years, as well as a well-supplied, quick-reactionary post-NATO European army, that leads me to believe that we're edging ever closer to this finalized form as the next and last global empiric superpower. Yes, as described in Sir Francis Bacon's New Atlantis, describing the destruction of America, its self-destruction, self-immolating. As you can see, it's now just shooting itself in the foot. It's going to get worse. Prince William was born on June 21st, breaking down to a royal number there, 3, 1982, during the 666 Saros solar eclipse. Yes, on the day of his birth, a solar eclipse was covering the Earth. The timing of the arrival of this latest royal heir apparent to the British throne caused a tremendous reaction by all the occult groups around the world who have been awaiting for this, the one, his arrival. The Saros cycle is an eclipse cycle, you see, with a period of 223 synodic months, approximately 6,585.3 days, or 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours. That can be used to predict eclipses of the sun and moon. One cycle after an eclipse, the sun, earth, and moon return to approximately the same relative geometry, and a nearly identical eclipse will occur. The earliest discovered historical record of the Saros cycle is by the Chaldeans, the ancient Babylonian astrologers, in the last several centuries B.C., and was later known to Hipparchus, Pliny, Ptolemy, but under different names. The Sumerian Babylonian word sar was one of the ancient Mesopotamian units of measurement. The name Saros is a Greek word for that measurement. The Saros symbol, by the way, is a circle denoting a great cycle of time, as well as the number 3,600, which is the square of 60. More on this when I return, because this is where the number 666 has its origin. Space back with more. Flip side of this break on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the guy to call Space. It's a view from Space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you so much for the one you sent. I appreciate that. So, I'm revealing to you right now the origin of 666. It has everything to do with the sun, because you see, they're sun worshippers. The Saros symbol is a circle, denotes a great cycle of time, as well as the number 3,600, which is the square of 60. The length of this cycle is not revealed, as we need to know the unit which is to be multiplied by 3,600. Just as the day is comprised in the year, so the year is comprised in the great Saros. It's like that the word applies to several different large cycles. 666 is the number of Hatkariel, the sum of the square of the sun. That's why the beast's number is 666, sun worshipping. The sun is the Antichrist. It supposedly represents also the splendors of being and the number of the beast of two backs, the satanic trinity, Typhon, Apophis, and Bees, opponent of Michael and Sorath. The sky above predicts what happens on Earth, according to the Illuminati, hence the phrase used by them, as it is above, so it is below. The arrival of the kings of the so-called divine bloodline were also heralded by the stars. For instance, Aloris, Adiur, Chaldean. According to Berossus, the first king of the mythical age of Babylon, the period before the flood of Xixuthus, he was the appointed shepherd of the people, and reigned 10 sari, or 36,000 years. Asaros being 3,600 years. And then there was Alaparus, Chaldean again, the second divine king of Babylonia, who reigned 3 sari. With this tiny bit of background on the ancient origin of Saros and tracking eclipses, you now can have a deeper understanding of why these occult groups were so tremendously excited about the 666th Saros that came about, involving a solar eclipse happening exactly on the day of the summer equinox in 1982, and, of all things, coinciding with the royal birth from the once thought to be of the divine bloodline of kings, the King David bloodline. And on top of that, this particular one coming into the world on that very day, having a direct line to the throne of the United Kingdom itself. And the first prince ever to have all of the Roman Catholic kings and queens of England and all the Protestant kings and queens of England in the same personage. Because you see, Prince Charles does not have any Roman Catholic kingship blood in his veins. But since he married Diana and had a child, two children, Harry and Prince William, both have both strains of blood from the Roman Catholic side and the Protestant side. Oh, and by the way, one of the symbols of the Antichrist, the black sun. You know the ABC logo? It's actually a black sun, an eclipse, a solar eclipse. On the eve of June 21st, 1982, druids, witches, Satanists from all over the world celebrated at all the pagan sites throughout Scotland, England, and Wales for what they thought, what they knew, would be a unique summer solstice. The day when their ancient sun god was to be reborn, venerated in a feast called the Feast of Lucifer's Rising. As such, it was a time of intense celebration which carried on far into the night, with, of course, all of the black magic trappings, sexual orgies, sacrifices, black masses, satanic worship, because it was prophesied by the ancient druids that their sun king would return to them upon some future solstice of June 21st. He would be born of a Merovingian princess. Very much like King James Version of the Bible's Jesus Christ's birth, where there were to be signs in the heavens which foretold of the Antichrist's own birth too. Quite rare for the summer solstice, a day known for its long hours of daylight being the longest day of the year. There was a solar eclipse followed by an even more rare lunar eclipse of the moon on the blackest part of a new moon, no less, allowing for even more strange alignments in the stars and planets to be seen as well. At precisely 9:03 p.m., royal number 12 invoked there, which breaks down to a royal 3, Princess Diana of Wales gave birth to Prince William, and England was given its next king, I believe. These events occurring all the same day, as seen by the occultists, were sure signs heralding that something of incredible importance was indeed taking place. The symbol of the sun god and the moon goddess clearly identify with Diana, a name also given to the ancient moon goddess who gave birth to the sun, foretold by the eclipses. Yet as the sun later shone in its strength, the moon was blighted with darkness, symbolic of death and the underworld. Certainly all of this meant something, many thought, in the occult world, as Prince Charles was visiting his wife and newborn child at St. Mary's Hospital. A member of the public actually shouted out to him to ask what he was going to name the firstborn boy. The Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, quickly replied, "You'll have to ask my wife, we're having a bit of an argument over that." The name William was finally given and made public to a waiting world, but not until a few days after his birth. Insiders believe that Charles had his way, and the name William was put before Arthur so his son would not have to be touted too much too early as King Arthur. Would they call Prince William, if he became king and chose Arthur, King Arthur? Would they put Arthur the First? Or would they say this mythical King Arthur lived in real life and would have to put King Arthur the Second? Very intriguing. That's surely to be revealed to us sometime in the not-too-distant future, I'm sure. But in an article entitled, of all things, No More Sacrifice, the London Psychogeographical Association newsletter stated that there were some Christians who had already pointed out that should Prince William become king and chose the name William, that he would be called King William the Fifth. Notice carefully here. By taking the W in William as being two V's, then with the first three L's and I's, L's and as Roman numerals for one, you see, they've constructed an incredibly intriguing anagram for the same once and future king. I am V1, 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 or I am 666. More next. Talk Radio AM 640. This is AVFS.
This is Spaceman. Talk Radio AM 640 and AVFS. Thank you so much for your email. I really appreciate your input to the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Spaceman at 640toronto.com. One address, the other space at 640toronto.com. Before the break, you take William. Take the W in William. Split it up into make two V's. Then with the first three L's and I's, presenting them as the Roman numeral for one, they give you I am 666. This has already been sent into the subconscious of the young people, by the way, by William James Adams Jr. He's that American rapper, songwriter, singer, actor, and producer, better known by his stage name, Will I Am. And you know, in the King James Version of the Bible, the God of the King James Version of the Bible is called the Great I Am. Will I Am. So it's already out there, heralded by Hollywood, the greatest brainwashing apparatus on the face of the earth. Prince William was born in London, 9:03 p.m., June 21, 1982. The birth took place just after the solar eclipse on that summer solstice, a specially powerful moment in a time when the sun, moon, and north node were closely aligned in the prince's seventh house in the emotional sign of Cancer. Eclipses are the great power points of the zodiac. The Illuminati believe they run through space and time in regular series called Saros cycles. These Saros cycles take about 1,200 years to travel from the North to the South Pole, vice versa. Each series got a different founding horoscope as well as a different name.
William was born into a series called Two Old North, which began in 792 AD, just before the first recognized English king was crowned. The first one. Born into a series, Two Old North, began in 792 AD, just before the first recognized English king was crowned. It's due to end in 2036, by the way, this Two Old North Sorrows, when the now Prince William will be 54 years old, breaking down to a 9, by the way. This also raises a lot of questions when you look deeply, more deeply into it. The most obvious is whether Prince William, if he does become King of Great Britain, might in fact be the last ever king of the United Kingdom. The meaning of the Sorrows Two Old North series is said to be that of separating or ending of unions, a recurring theme clearly lived out in Prince William's life so far. Then there's this. You need to know that the time allotted for this period of sorrows is 18 years for a Sorrows times 37 journeys of 1,200 years each to travel from the north to the South Pole, equaling the equivalent of 666 years. A few other events which also occurred in 1982, the birth year of Prince William, these connected the city of London to the seemingly dark forces which are now promoting the Antichrist. A quick research of the origin of the city of London will show you that Brutus of Troy, a Roman consul who conquered Spain, was the mythological founder of London. He first called it Trojanova, or the New Troy. It was then changed over time, the city of London's name, to Trinovantus, then to Londoninium, then the city of London, in Latin, Londoninium. And it was established by the Romans in 43 AD as the capital of Rome, Britain, Roman Britain. The name Londinium is now thought to be pre-Roman and possibly even pre-Celtic in origin, although there's been no consensus on what it really means. Now to those events of 1982 connected to this city and to Prince William's birth year. The first being a London murder that happened on June 4, just days before Prince William's birth, very closely associated too with Freemasonry's famous, or I should say, infamous P2 organization, the Italian arm of Freemasonry, with Giuseppe Manzini as its founder. Former Gestapo chief Klaus Barbie, who escaped from Germany after receiving a Vatican passport, along with many other Nazis. He was also a member of this group. This was the murder of Roberto Calvi I'm referring to. He was the Italian banker, dubbed God's banker by the press due to his close association with the bank arm of the Vatican. A native of Milan, Calvi was the chairman of Bank Ambrosiano, which collapsed in one of modern Italy's biggest political scandals, and his death in London in June of 1982 has been the source of enduring controversy. I believe that that's when the Vatican was completely taken over, monetarily, by the Brits, the elites, the Zionists, to go along with the global plan. And now they've been forced to go along. Calvi had been a member of Licio Gelli's illegal Masonic lodge, P2, and members of P2 referred to themselves as Fratineri, or Black Friars. Licio Gelli, the master mason who led the Masonic group P2, Most of its members are Roman Catholic, by the way, with the current Italian Prime Minister, or the then Italian Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, a past member. It is suggested that their connections spread right around the globe and right into the heart of the Vatican. Gelli, Lizio Gelli, would have numerous audiences with the then Pope Paul VI. This led to a suggestion in some quarters that Calvi was murdered as a Masonic warning because of symbolism associated with the word Black Friars. On the day, because it was under a bridge called Black Friars, that he was hung. On the day before his body was found, Calvi had been stripped of his post at Bank Ambrosiano, by the Bank of Italy, and his 55-year-old private secretary, Gazziella Crocher, had jumped to her death from a fifth-floor window at Bank Ambrosiano earlier. Now, Calvi would later be murdered under Blackfriars Bridge, as I stated, in London, Masonic style. Calvi's style of death, that Masonic form of punishment, interestingly enough, the City of London coroner, Dr. David Paul, actually shared a billet with Prince Philip during their naval days in World War II. An interesting connection, what? The foremost names who had contact with the P2 are Henry Kissinger, Edmund de Rothschild, David Rockefeller, all the heavy hitters. The Italian journal Panorama wrote that Elie de Rothschild arranged the necessary amount of money for the Masonic hanging of banker Roberto Calvi, who either had or was about to talk against the P2. Now, Henry Kissinger was directly involved, too, at the top of that lodge. Was then a cryptic message in about 1982 itself by Benjamin Cream, a spokesperson for the so-called Maitreya Christ, stating that a great world teacher was being born in London and would soon show himself to the world. More next on Talk Radio, AM 640 on Space. I'm the guy to call Space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. You can email me, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thanks so much for the one you've sent. Not much time tonight, so I'm going to get right to it and stay away from the emails if I can, but they are so good. Thank you again. So, as I was saying before the break, The P2 organization murdering this man Calvi under the Blackfriars Bridge in London, Masonic style, was a sign that the banking cabal in Britain, the London Square Mile, which rule over all economies in the world, had taken over the Vatican. Through, of course, money loans. And at that same time as Roberto Calvi died and his 55-year-old private secretary jumped from a fifth-floor window at the bank in Italy to her death, they obviously can't face what has happened, and they're to blame, the Vatican falling into the hands of the banking cabal of London. Now, Henry Kissinger, as I said before the break, also directly involved on that, in that lodge, the P2 lodge. And then, in 1982, Benjamin Cream, a lot of people were naming as the Maitreya Christ, thinking that he might be the Antichrist, stated to the world that a great teacher was being born as he spoke in London, and would soon show himself to the world. And next, oddly enough, was the 1982 globally released film called The Omen 3, The Final Conflict, which makes countless connections, by the way, with England and the Antichrist, as well as a lot of other very intriguing points of interest written into that script. Not to be outdone by a mere motion picture was the 1982 spring release of the best-selling book, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, by those three now famous writers, Michael Bergeon, Richard Lee, and Henry Lincoln, that was made into a movie. The first book of its kind detailing Jesus Christ, Mary Magdalene marrying, having children, and begetting the Merovingian bloodline connections pertaining to the past and present day monarchies. Readers of that same book came away with yet another reason to believe something was very unusual about the Grail Princess Diana, and that of her young son born on the 666th Saros solar eclipse. Whenever you have need of anything once a month, and when the moon is full, you shall assemble in some secret place, or in a forest altogether join, to adore the potent spirit of your queen, my mother, great Diana. That's a quote taken from the Encyclopedia of Wicca and Witchcraft. And here's another revealing quote from a book entitled Grimoire of Luciferian Witchcraft. By the oath of Belial and Saturn, the awakening of hidden light, I call upon thee, Asmodeus, devil lord. I invoke thee within my very essence. Pass beyond the veil little known by most, for I am a child of this flesh. I offer now my own will to the powers of night and the great work itself, that through my dedication of the path of witch blood, I shall know the secrets not so hidden. Yet another great quote from the 21 Lessons of Merlin this time. Very, very pertinent. The unwary soul who fails to grapple with the mocking demon of illusion will return to the earth as the slave of illusion. To become a true master of fate, you must first become a knower of self. When you can repose in comfort between the wings of your dragon, then will shadows forever vanish, leaving that which within you knows, for it is a knowledge not of fleeting times, lifetimes of illusion, but of a real man that was, that is, and that will be again. The once and future king, Arthur, being invoked there in the 21 Lessons of Merlin. Then there's the final quote from its satanic rituals by Satanist Anton LaVey. Despite others' attempts to identify a certain number with Satan, it will be known that 9 is his number. 9 is the number of the ego because it is always returning to itself. And it does so in mathematics with 9 if you follow it. No matter what is done through the most complex multiplication of 9 by any other number, in the end, the final equation, 9, will still be standing. 9 always returns to itself. In mathematics, the infant is learning to walk, and by the first working year of his reign, he will have steadied his steps, and by the next few years, he will have attained maturity, and his reign will be filled with wisdom, reason, delight. The little horn waxes great towards the south and east toward the Holy Land. That's written in Daniel 7:24, again in Daniel 8:9, and then again in Daniel 11:21, and then again, yet again, in Daniel 11:28. And the 10 horns out of his kingdom, meaning Europe, are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the other 10. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceedingly great toward the south, and toward the east, and toward the pleasant land. That, of course, meaning Israel. A vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably. He shall obtain the kingdom, meaning of Israel, through lies, through cunning deceit and flattery. Then shall he return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant, which are the Jews, the Jewish people. He shall do great exploits and return to his own land. From just those few prophetic scriptures in Daniel, an important and much overlooked clue is seen, because here you see the Antichrist king is not a native to the nation of Israel. You need to look very closely. It clearly mentions that after his initial visit to Israel, where he will do great and remarkable exploits, the Antichrist king returns to his own land. This fact should stun those who vainly believe that the Antichrist must be a Jew living in Israel. So from these two clearly mentioned directions, written in the book of Daniel in the King James Version of the Bible, informs you that the Antichrist king is not of the Holy Land of Israel at all, but must travel some distance, both south and east, to even get to Israel. It must mean that his land is positioned, of course, northwest. The opposite of southeast is northwest. The land must be northwest of Israel. Looking on any detailed map and tracing a broad northwestern line from Israel, you can clearly see all of what the ancient Roman Empire, yet following this northern and western line to its furthest extent, you arrive at none other than the nation of Great Britain, an island nation which perfectly fits the scriptures of the Antichrist kings arising from the sea, from a nation in the sea. So with this, the King James Version of the Bible is clearly showing yet another clue, even wanting you to know something of the identity of this Antichrist character, who is clearly foreign to the nation of Israel, comes from a non-Jewish Gentile nation, and as seen from other writings in the Bible, is entirely a European king, actually having no Jewish blood within him whatsoever. And yet he eventually is given the honor of the kingdom and accepted as the prophesied Messiah and King of the Jews. How can this be? Well, there can really be only one answer. The bloodline of the Holy Grail, the heavily propagated yet false lineage that seemingly connects him to the King David bloodline, who is the progenitor of the true Messianic bloodline to the House of Windsor, as well as the House of Stuart. Now you can see yet another reason why the tenets of the so-called lost, 10 lost tribes of British Israel doctrine and its pompous beliefs are so dangerous, because it's already deceiving many, especially within the fast-growing Mormon religion, into accepting the notions of a future messianic figure from England, which is actually thought of by many to be the most satanic nation on the face of the earth today. It's the Spaceman. There's more on the other side of this break on Talk Radio, AM 640.
I'm the guy they call Space. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. This is A View from Space. I communicate to you, with you, not only from this microphone, but from email, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com are the two addresses. And thank you so much. They come in, literally, from around the world.
I want to also make you understand that a lot of these things occurring at the time of the Antichrist are looking like it could happen at any moment. The revealing of this Savior of the world. But at first he comes on very benevolent. He does not come on as a tyrant. You need to know this. It's a slow seduction, and then he turns the good and the evil. Both sides come out. Now, this is going to unfold as a series of extremely destructive events take place, which will set the stage for this Antichrist plan. One of the events which is likely to take place is the Battle of Gog and Magog, in which Israel is suddenly attacked by Russia, Iran, and possibly Syria, and maybe one of their new allies in Libya, Sudan, Turkey, Lebanon, and many Islamic terrorist bands who align with them then attack Israel, to which, as shown in Ezekiel 38 and 39, the King James Version of the Bible states God will destroy, directly intervene supernaturally, and destroy this massive invasion force while they are still on the mountains of Israel before they have a chance to even fire a single shot. That's stated in the King James Version of the Bible. This single event then sets the stage for Israel to very radically change from its current national secular belief into one that will once again seek after its ancient biblical God as they feel that it was only by God's own hand that saved them from such impending destruction. The third temple will then be built, possibly right where the Dome of the Rock stands today, and the Jews shall once again worship their God there. A televised national call to prayer shall go out, in which they will cry out for the Messiah to come and reign as a king over them. Then a lone figure will rise up among them, claiming to be the prophet Elijah, who Revelation calls the false prophet, performing great and deceptive miracles in Israel while acting as a forerunner to the even more deceptive one to arise, who is, of course, the Antichrist. During the 19th century, the Pierre de Sion, the Priory of Sion, working through Freemasonry, and the Hieron du Val d'Or cult attempted to establish a revived and updated Holy Roman Empire, a kind of United States of Europe, ruled of this sort, with a reformed church too, by the way, and ruled by the Habsburgs. And this radically reformed church, this United States of Europe, will be run by. A Europe of this sort would constitute a new and unified political force in international affairs, an entity whose status would ultimately be comparable to the Soviet Union or the United States. And it might well emerge stronger than both. The Hieron du Val d'Or sought to reconcile, as the legendary Hormus is said to have reconciled, Christian and pagan mysteries, and it ascribed special significance to Druidic thought. That is a direct quote from Michael Bajan, Richard Lee, and Lincoln, whose book is The Holy Blood, Holy Grail. Naturally, these three Masonic authors wrote about the emphasis of the United States of Europe and its central place in the Priory of Sion's agenda, which they know well, believe me, stating in their book, Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, that its aim would seem to include a theocratic United States of Europe, a trans or pan-European confederation assembled into a modern empire and ruled by a dynasty descended from Jesus. Here's a telling excerpt from the book. The Sign Revelation, written by Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince. Delving into the Priory's murky history, the Priory of Sion reveals that even darker links exist with racist, collaborationist, and even terrorist groups. It seems that at least the concept of the European Union is the product of an occult conspiracy inspired by individuals who believed they were in contact with spirit entities. Where we'll go next remains to be seen, of course, but almost certainly, sooner or later, it will affect us all on planet Earth. To the Holy Blood, Holy Grail authors, Plantard explained that certain American bankers were involved with the Priory of Sion's, that's the secret society, because they supported the concept of the United States of Europe and the entire Antichrist agenda. Although the United States generally sees a united Europe as an economic rival and a challenge to its global position, certain interests within the American banking system, especially in Chicago, that do welcome such a move, by the way. And this is the very reason why we are now seeing such questionable moves by American bankers and lending institutions that has led to the worsening of the American financial crisis. Not a betterment, but a worsening. As a result, they're now readying the world for a new monetary system to be installed. It'll probably be, undoubtedly, a new electronic funds transfer system that would be put in place after the currencies of the world are destroyed, made totally worthless by the sheer amount of debt owned by its particular countries. Destroying the American dollar outright is the first phase of forcibly bringing America down, allowing for Europe to eventually take the reins of global power. Pushing the same agenda to its final working stages, the now president and about to exit, Barack Obama, has been put into quick power by Chicago's banking elite, who themselves are fulfilling the goals, the Illuminati, toward America's complete financial and global demise. The elite in Chicago, as well as on Wall Street, have direct ties to the royal crown of Europe. Most obvious is the Masonic power structure behind the EU and the British royal family. Many would also be shocked to discover that Europe itself is beholden to the British crown, despite a growing EU power base, because of the Masonic plan to establish a future British Antichrist. The banking cabal of London runs the EU. Germany is the face figure. And remember, the royal family are German descent. The King James Version of the Bible states that the Whore of Babylon, as an end-time kingdom, could it be the Roman-born city of London? The Whore of Babylon? Revelation 17 says, I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, whom the kings and inhabitants of the earth have made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads, 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery, Babylon, the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. The woman which you saw is that great city born from Rome, which reigneth over the kings of the earth. I gotta have Nostradamus kick in his 2 cents worth next.
Space, back with more. Talk Radio, AM 640 at ABFS. I'm the guy to call Space. You can email me, spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. As I said before the break, Nostradamus wrote in Century 2, Quatrain 51, Bloodline of the One Demanded of London, burnt by a raging great fire in the year 66. That was when 66 AD was when London almost burnt totally to the ground. The ancient lady will fall from her high place, and many of the same cult will be killed. Revelation 18 states, how much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning, famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire. And the kings of the earth shall lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. Every shipmaster and all the company in ships, and as many as trade by sea, stood afar off, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads, and cried, weeping and wailing, for in 1 hour is she made desolate. And a mighty angel took up a stone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall not be found. Now, there are three distinct landscapes to the appearance of the harlot Babylon, which can be figuratively referred to as her body, spirit, and soul. According to the King James Version of the Bible, these three aspects of Babylon are to be destroyed at three different points in time. The first aspect, according to Jeremiah 51, verses 59 through 64, is the literal geographical city of ancient Babylon in present-day Iraq. This would refer spiritually to the body of Babylon, a literal city that has existed in various states of ruin, renewal, and control by various ethnicities and powers throughout its physical life. Genesis 10 indicates Nimrod was the original founder of Babylon, Babel, ancient Babel, from where he built the Tower of Babel. The word Babylon is the Greek variant of Akkadian Babylou. Babylou meaning gateway of the gods. In the Hebrew Bible, the name appears as Babel, interpreted by Book of Genesis 11:9, a backward 9:11, to mean confusion, dispersion of languages, from the verb balal, meaning to confuse and dispense, disperse. Babylon, as a city, rose to power during the drawing from the Mesopotamian histories of the earlier Sumerian culture, before it also became one of the wonders of the ancient world, a kingdom later reflected in the vision of the prophet Daniel, who saw a large statue with a golden head to represent Babylon being part of the larger body of global satanic kingdoms that would rule the world. In time, Babylon would fall to other influences, meaning the Persian Empire, the Macedonians under Alexander the Great. But even eventually, Babylon became nothing but a few barely maintained structures in the desert. The physical city never rose again to hold the epic promise it had in the ancient past. But in 1985, one Saddam Hussein started rebuilding that very city on top of the old ruins, investing in both restoration and new construction, something which really disgusted the British-backed archaeologists. Saddam Hussein inscribed his own name on many of the bricks in the imitation of the ancient King of Babylon and Antichrist archetype, Nebuchadnezzar,
Remember that story? Saddam was said to believe he was the reincarnated Nebuchadnezzar. And most recently, that second Gulf War, the U.S. presence in Iraq, which, when they pulled out, gave it to and the rise to ISIS. A lot of damage done. A lot of damage done. Now, the third aspect, the spirit of Babylon, is already affecting the minds of millions globally in one form or another. Because Babylon, the literal destruction of the literal city of Babylon, prophesied to occur near the last days. So the second manifestation of Babylon is spiritually called rises up from the ancient spirit of Babylon to culminate in that future sacrilegious seat described in Revelation by the King James Version of the Bible. This religious system is in its maturing stages right now with the globally accepted New Age movement and its major tenets, beliefs drawn from the ancient Babylonian witchcraft, ancient ideas, and the magical systems even. The spirit of Babylon is already infecting the minds of millions globally too in one form or another, and guiding the planet into this one world thinking. Now, the belief is that spiritual power can come to an individual outside of God through self-effort by so-called forces of nature, or from the fallen spirits behind those same forces. It's all part of the mystery religion of Babylonian paganism. All of the Illuminati's religious beliefs are descended from Mystery Babylon and can be described as Babylonian paganism. So those who claim that they are not pagans because they are not witches or are witches and claim that they aren't satanic simply do not understand the common root and source of all the polytheistic and pantheistic beliefs that originated from the ancient Babylonian mystery religions dating back over 4,000 years ago and by the fallen ones who infected mankind with the cult of such black magic knowledge in the days of Jared from the summit of Mount Hermon. The third aspect, the Babylon kingdom to rise, is the physical kingdom of the Antichrist, whose own future kingdom of Babylon has in itself a couple of aspects, the religious one and the economic. These two seemingly opposed aspects is what's being referenced in the King James Version of the Bible in Daniel's prophecy when the angel Gabriel told him these aspects are as iron mixed with clay. Now, while the mystery is, that is, this future Babylon, seems to be rooted in the Middle East, very few doubt that it is in the West where you can literally see how Babylon's paganism fused into ancient Roman worship, past and even in the present. The European Union, which was established by the Treaty of Rome, is without a doubt the ultimate fulfillment of the restored Roman Empire, with Europe's deep desire to identify itself with Babylon. The European Union has even adopted Babylon's ancient symbols for themselves. Outside the Council of Europe, building in Brussels, sculpture of a woman riding a bull, representation of the Greek myth of Europa. This building is the nerve center of the EU, where laws are written by unelected men, only later to be rubber-stamped by the EU Parliament, and its new Parliament building opened in Strasbourg, back in 2000, and is deliberately modeled on Bruegel's painting of the Tower of Babel. When he was asked by a journalist why the Tower of Babel, why would he copy it for this new building, an EU official answered, "What they failed to do to complete 3,000 years ago, we in Europe will finish now."
Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. Back with more right after this.
I'm the guy to call Space. It's a View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. Thank you so much for your email. I really appreciate it. And the two addresses that I have are spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. So, Europe will eventually become the power base of a new world economic system, as well as a one-world religion. This is the mystery behind the Whore of Babylon. The author of Revelation's own prophetic vision into these future events were remarkably similar, yet even more detailed than Daniel's was, as John was shown the Whore of Babylon, the religious system riding the power of the Roman Empire, that beast that rules from a city on seven hills, interpreted as Vatican City. That one city throughout its history has never, ever had any pretensions about her rights to rule over the kings of the earth from her city situated on seven hills. Remember, in the ancient times, it was the Pope who said who would be king. The colossal wealth the Vatican had, now indebted to the banking cabal of London, included solid gold bullion worth billions stored with the Rothschild Control Bank in England and the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank. Now, the Vatican Whore also has enormous investments with the Rothschilds in Britain, with giant oil and weapons corporations like Shell and GE, among several others. Therefore, Revelation's global religious Whore of Babylon aspect could be none other than the Roman Catholic Church, originally formed by mixing Babylonian paganism and Christianity into a global new religion cited under the premise of unifying the ancient world. What's more, England's own connections with the Roman Vatican are staggering at every level, from its global religion to finance. It was this religious Babylon that has, since its inception, been centered in Rome. That same ancient city under whose power many nations succumbed to as they filled their coffers, making it more and more like a drunken whore. This aspect of religious Babylon, which we're showing now, has intoxicated herself from the blood of the martyrs over the last 2,000 years. And it's the greatest clue marking her as that deified institution existing since the time when Christians were being martyred. Through its great evils, the Babylonian whore has even become rich off of the blood of the martyrs, using Christ in the most evil of ways as a leverage to gain those heights of such majestic power over the people. Her temporary control of the beast will only be tolerated by the Antichrist so that she could be used to bring her illegitimate children together in unity, so that together they might be destroyed all at once. That is the intention of the Antichrist in the end game. The ten kings will then devote all of their power, authority, and will to the establishment of this finalized kingdom of the Antichrist by destroying the religious aspect of Mystery Babylon. Just before this event, Revelation 18, verses 4 through 8, actually states, "But I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you. How much she has glorified herself. Therefore shall all her fiery plagues come in one day." Revelation 18:7 states that in her final form, Babylon, or Babylondon, the economic center from which the Antichrist holds all the power over the planet's wealth, is no longer referred to as a harlot, but instead as a queen. Queen Britannia. Even an arrogant queen that does not recognize herself as being widowed by the destruction of her former religious consort. Like Vatican City, London's Inner Temple is also a privately owned corporation or city-state located right smack in the heart of Greater London. And it became a sovereign state in 1694 when King William III of Orange privatized that bank, turned it into the Bank of England, and turned it over to the bankers. By 1812, Nathan Rothschild crashed the English stock system, a stock market, and gained control of the Bank of England. Today, the city-state of London is the world's financial power center and the wealthiest square mile on the face of the earth. It houses the Rothschild-controlled Bank of England, Lloyd's of London, the London Stock Exchange, all British banks, the branch offices of 385 foreign banks, 70 U.S. banks. It has its own courts, its own laws, its own flag, its own police force, its own mayor. And it's not even part of Greater London or the British Commonwealth. And it pays no tax. The city-state of London houses Fleet Street's newspaper and publishing monopolies, the controllers of the flow of information. It also is the headquarters for the worldwide English Freemasonry and headquarters for the worldwide money cartel, known as the Crown. The Club of Rome is a conspiratorial umbrella organization, and it promotes the one world government. A marriage, actually, between Anglo-American financiers and the old secret nobility families, the black nobility families of Europe, particularly the so-called divine bloodline of London. The key to the successful control of the world is their ability to create and manage savage economic recessions and eventual economic depressions. They're the best at building a bubble and popping it and taking the profit. The first to be taken down in this next financial slaughter will be the United States. Because of the prophecy of Daniel 9, verse 26, which reveals that the Antichrist will come from the people that destroyed Jerusalem in 70 AD. And we know the Queen's City will be found in what was once the Roman Empire, albeit the future Queen of Economic Babylon, is therefore perfectly represented in its Britannia form. Interestingly, London was actually created and founded by the Romans around 33 AD, the same year Jesus Christ was crucified. And it quickly became a large industrial Roman port city, linking London directly to Rome. After which Rome then flooded thousands of troops into England through their new city stronghold, where they conquered ancient Britain north all the way to Hadrian's Wall, which some of it still stands today. Biblical prophecy authors and researchers have debated for decades, announcing that the Antichrist must be a Roman and come out of Rome, from their linear understanding of the scriptures in Daniel and Revelation. But a more careful look at those same prophecies clearly indicate the coming prince arises out of a nation and city that was part of the ancient Roman Empire, but not Rome itself. The fact that London was actually created by Roman hands does show that London became, in effect, the new Rome. As Rome and the Roman Empire itself waned in power, England and its new capital city of London gained in power, gained in prestige, gained in global influence. You can see by this example how an historic commercial and financial Goliath, like that 677-acre former ancient Roman settlement, the city of London, with its banking system awash in Masonic connections, will certainly fulfill its intended role. I'm a spaceman.
This is Talk Radio AM 640. Talking about our, I would think, immediate future in a critical cash clash.
What a guy to call space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. Tracing the rise of the Antichrist in various books, and one of them being the Holy Bible, King James Version of the Christian Bible. This is Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. You can communicate with me one way only. It's by email, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. And thank you for the one you sent. Now, there's one last connection I want to be making with the Antichrist and Prince William. Diana's child, Prince William, and the Red Dragon of Wales, as this future King of England is actually believed to have been conceived in Wales during an October 1981 three-day visit by Prince Charles and his then newlywed wife, Princess Diana. It being Diana's first public engagement and first ever official function outside of London under the new title Princess of Wales. Now, today, many believe that that's why she was killed. That in their zeal to protect the Merovingian lineage from ever being tainted or producing an unwanted royal heir who would forever be connected to the future King of England, the Knights of the Templar, the guardians of the Merovingian divine bloodline, ensured Princess Diana's life ended before any possible new marriage or pregnancy could happen to come up and result out of a union with someone else. In mid-1997, while dating Dodi Fayed, of course, you'll recall, both a marriage and a pregnancy were rumored to be true. She died just 2 weeks later after running into the 13th pillar in that Paris tunnel. I believe everything is literally already prepared for him. The Antichrist is alive among us, and the malevolent spirit which seeks him out during a very specific moment in time, during the future king's own quest for power, shall completely take him over, mind and body, and it will be done willingly. The Bible explicitly describes this, and this spirit of the Antichrist as a red dragon, rising up from its otherworldly abyss, and immediately without reservation, seemingly foreknowing its intended target, possesses the prince, who shall become the Antichrist. He is thereby referred to in some versions of the Bible as the willful king. For instance, in Daniel 11, verse 36, and by those held in the grip of the satanic occult as the king of Thelema, Thelema, of course, being the royalty or kingly will, during the time of the earth's reconstruction, when the Antichrist ascends to power, he will literally be seen as everything to everyone, with natural charm of both parents. He will exhibit the strongest traits of his Germanic father, from uniting global faiths to adopting a more radical view on green environmentalism and energy worldwide. Something seen as most important in that future world, after the devastation and plague described in Revelation, from his Celtic mother, he will seem to exhibit all of her maternal instincts toward reaching out to the lost, reaching out to the hurting of society, which is quite uncanny, since during the last days, the Antichrist is foreseen by the King James Version of the Bible and every prophet since to become, or to come rather, on a platform of great peace and humanitarianism, if only to better counterfeit the person by which Christ appeared to the people in his time. But after the coming collapse, while the earth is still rising out of a time of great global civil unrest and lawlessness, which I believe is just around the corner, the Antichrist
will also exhibit a leaning toward martial law against any and all who cause instability in the New World Order that is being forged by him. As well as with all despotic, tyrannical leaders, this will begin slowly at first, and begin in secret. Yet, as more power is gained by his hand, and the world falls under his complete control and spell, then will he begin to show more of an iron fist, which always appears once all the power given turns into the power that is all corrupting. Much like that which was recently seen in the way a campaigning of Obama in 2008 kind of went. That guy who held all the answers for hurting America with its people and their utterly blind and naivety, having been so perfectly primed and prepared for one like him to arrive. All out worshipped him. They did. And could do nothing but hypnotically sing his praises. Well, that's the way it's going to be with all the people who worship the Antichrist beast around the world and the red dragon that empowers them. They too, in their blind ignorance, shall have been so perfectly primed and prepared for one like him to arrive on the scene, even as they shall literally cry out to sing his praises, saying amongst themselves, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And in so doing, shall they all fulfill the ancient prophecy written of them, of their blind adoration for Satan. The very question they ask in their praise of him conjures up a picture of a man with near supernatural ability, even as it depicts one who no one else could even hope to compete with on any level. Therefore, it's from that generation who lives to see the Antichrist that shows you in the present what this beast will be seen and seems to be. In a world that just witnessed every kind of horror that proceeded after a world war, and a faked alien invasion, I believe, thrown in, replete with a comet strike, as well as the resulting complete collapse of society, once empowered, this Antichrist king will crush every kind of lawlessness that was rampant across the planet, bringing the whole of Earth, minus a few mentioned in Daniel 11:41, under one universal law that he enforces that was set forward by the descending gods that appeared after. So, he will be seen as having all the answers to the world's problems. And after such a time, which seemed to be the apocalypse, he'll seem to be the prophesied Messiah that all global cultures, in their religious writings, who arrives only after such a global calamity and haven't been waiting for since their earliest pagan prophets wrote of such a man. Satan's Antichrist will easily deceive the world, his greatest legacy among the people being the bringing of peace, security, and a means by which people will only rely on him for their own existence. An Antichrist indeed. He will also do that which was never completed by his fathers. He will remove the most devastating weapons of war from every surviving nation, as he very subtly creates for himself a world where he alone holds the power. And that's what the push, the clamoring for all the countries to give up their nuclear bombs is all about. And Satan does this to gain the worship of the entire world through his front man, the Antichrist.
while on the other hand, stockpiling the only weapons that could quickly destroy entire worlds with the hope of carrying out a more complete nuclear Armageddon upon his world. And all by his own hand, through his chosen one, the charismatic Antichrist King. And then, after achieving his five wills, this is the ancient dragon's final goal. He wants to destroy the earth completely and everyone in it. Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. More next. It's the Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one you've sent. So the 10 lost tribes of Israel. The lie promoting the future king of England as a Messiah. Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I might speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. For I know that after my death, you will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. And Moses spoke in the ears of all the congregation of the house of Israel the words of that prophecy, Deuteronomy 31 through verse 30. And then again in Deuteronomy 4, verses 29 through 31. But if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him, if thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. When thou art in tribulation, and all these things are coming upon you, even in the last days, if you turn to the Lord your God and be obedient unto his voice, for the Lord thy God is a merciful God, he will not forsake you, neither will he destroy you, nor forget the covenant of the fathers which he also swore unto them. Malachi 4, 5, and 6. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the Lord, and he shall turn the religious heart of the fathers toward the children, and the heart of the children back to their forefathers, lest I come and smite the earth with cursing. And Elijah answered and said to the captain of 50, if I be a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And there came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. 2 Kings, verse 1, or verse 10 rather. 2 Kings 1, verse 10. And then again in Revelation 13, verses 11 through 13. And I beheld another beast coming up from out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, yet he spake as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast, and caused the earth to worship the beast whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, even making fire come down from heaven. Thessalonians 2, verses 3 through 5. For that day shall not come, except where come a falling away first. Then that man of sin shall be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposed and exalted himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he, meaning the Spirit of truth, who now restrains, will let until he be taken out of the way, and then shall the wicked one be revealed, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all powers and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of truth, that they might be saved.
For this cause God shall send them a strong delusion, that they should believe a lie. Thus, have not the Jews specifically themselves completely defenseless for such a deception? Antichrist doctrine permeates modern Judaism in that they believe in every generation is born a descendant of Judah who is worthy to become Israel's Messiah. Even their Chatham Sofer dictates, when the time will come, God will reveal himself to him and send him, and then the spirit of Messiah, which is hidden and secreted, will be made manifest in him. Seeing the way Jews speak today about the coming of Messiah, it's easy to see why God is about to allow for such strong delusion. The spirit of Moshiach is the occult. What is the strong delusion, that lie that Satan will have most of the world under? Whatever it'll be, consider this. It causes the majority of the earth to worship the Antichrist and that which gives him his power as a god, as I started this show tonight with. Consider also that whatever this delusion might be, it somehow causes the state of Israel to think Antichrist will be their long-awaited Messiah. Now, many would wonder, how could that ever be possible? Think about this. You've already seen how the bloodline of the Holy Grail and Magdalene doctrine revolving around the Merovingian bloodline is casting new light into the traditional Christian views about Christ. Yet, since Jews have never accepted Christ or his divinity or plan for salvation that leads to unity back to our Creator, this same Gnostic Christian infused Holy Grail bloodline and its supposed power through the mandate of divine rule means nothing to them. Enter the parallel satanic doctrines of British Israelism, the Ten Lost Tribes of Israel theory, and their messianic bloodline of King David. Since Jews believe their Messiah must come from the royal family of David, and any seriously considered messianic candidate therefore must have his seemingly endless genealogy traced back to Israel's most beloved king, King David, this lie, which runs parallel to the Holy Grail lineage, amounts to an equally powerful deception, albeit specifically directed at Jews, playing on their hopes and their desires for a Davidic Messiah to rule over them as an ascended mediator between them and God, one that will finally bring them peace, and along with it, a new age. You don't realize possibly how mainstream religious Jews, both past and present, still will not recognize Christ, their true Messiah, whose lineage is easily traced back to King David, while at the same time, being the literal son of David who fulfilled every single Davidic messianic prophecy attributed him for his first advent. Interestingly, Jews have never believed Christ to be their Messiah because of his Davidic lineage, as they see it, came through his mother's side and not the patriarchal father's side. They also quickly point out that since Christ was the product of a virgin birth, how could any father, let alone a descendant of David, be the human father to Jesus Christ? In 1919, it was the British Israeli World Federation that was founded in London, near Buckingham Palace, too. During this time, many prominent British citizens patronized this organization. The organization that continues to this very day, and it continues to maintain local chapters throughout the British Isles and the world. In Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Godfrey de Bouillon, the Grail family and actual scion of the Merovingians, was installed in everything but name as King of Jerusalem. This incident is recounted in A Modern History of Lorraine, printed in 1966. This work contains a special introduction by Otto von Habsburg, who today is the titular Duke of Lorraine and King of Jerusalem. And it might be that the Merovingians were ultimately of Judaic origin. But if this were so, it seemed to be essentially incidental. But important it might be, there was something of even greater importance involved. We were still overlooking something. This puts the Priory of Sion's claim that Merovingian's survivor is the rightful heir or legitimate king, and putting it in context. On the one hand, it appeals to the powerful archetype of the lost king, such as with the British with King Arthur, and their once and future king. And the concept of a great king would thus have constituted a fulfillment of Nostradamus' prophecies, and it would have actualized, at least in some sense, the monarchist blueprint outlined in the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And the Habsburgs would have been more than imperial heads of state. They would have become a dynasty of priest-kings, like the future Messiah anticipated by the Jews. So the return of the prophet Elijah, leading Israel to the Antichrist. The Malachi scripture even says, seen above, it is in fact the final two verses of the Jewish Bible. In our testament, which ends quite dramatically with God demanding that his people return to the religious roots of their ancestors, where they accepted the Holy One of Israel as the angel of the Lord, the Son of the living God. Or he will send a cursing among them, as is listed in Deuteronomy, or is historically written in Deuteronomy. It's the Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640. Coming back with more right after this break. That's me there. Call me the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS. Like to communicate with me, I have two addresses, space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. Now, the return of the prophet Elijah, leading Israel to the Antichrist. The Malachi scripture really states in the Old Testament, which ends quite dramatically, by the way, with God demanding that his people return to the religious roots of their ancestors, where they accepted the Holy One of Israel as the angel of the Lord, the Son of the living God, or he would send a curse among them. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. We also see that this future time is marked with a specific event in the return of Elijah, who in the last days precedes the coming of the Lord at the end of the world, from which is commonly understood in both Judaism and Christianity that Elijah is to return in advance of the day of the Lord. Satan, knowing this, and knowing that ancient Israel has already rejected the Messiah, Jesus Christ, as well as his forerunner, John the Baptist, of whom the scriptures cite as he who came in the spirit of Elijah, knows only that modern Israel is still waiting for their prophetic Elijah, their Moshiach ben Joseph, as he's called, and the Messiah, Moshiach ben David, to appear at some point shortly before the end of the world. Satan, therefore, will deceptively provide Israel exactly what they expect the most. Enter the false prophet Elijah, a demonic figure in the form of a man, appearing as Israel's ancient prophet, having two horns like a lamb, yet speaking like a dragon, being seemingly holy, yet speaking on behalf of the dragon Satan and his Antichrist, preparing the way for his arrival. You can only surmise What manner of deceptive evils this anti-Elijah figure will speak to Israel in advance of the Antichrist's arrival? It's sufficient to say it must involve major influences from British Israeli doctrine. British Israelism, at present, one of the most dangerous, spiritually corrupt frauds ever perpetrated against mankind, yet it's currently finding a lot of new followers within the nation of Israel already, as well as among Jews globally who have been besieged with spiritual attacks by the New Age movement of late. Just as in ancient times, religious Jews today still have the same many requirements for one to be considered their Messiah. Yet those same requirements are becoming increasingly more liberalized in their interpretations as the New Age movement has seemingly worked to target Jews and their rigid belief system. The end result of this British Israelism belief upon the minds of the Jewish people, therefore, serves to soften up the masses before the false prophet even arrives, who will confirm every facet of its false teaching. While the world, including teachers of prophecy, seem to overlook the false prophet, especially naming his elusive identity. Understanding the nature of this second beast is key to understanding how Satan plans to deceive Israel into accepting his son, the Antichrist, as their Messiah. Revelation 13 clearly describes two beasts arising, one from the earth, interpreted as Israel, and one from the sea, a foreign or island nation, Britain. And Israel did not accept the true Messiah, Jesus Christ, or his prophet in John the Baptist. They are today still waiting for Moshiach ben David, the Antichrist, and Moshiach ben Yosef, the false prophet, to arrive. And despite the names given to the beasts in Revelation, it will be the second beast, Elijah, appearing to Israel first, with the first beast, Antichrist, Messiah, appearing after. In other words, since Jews rejected the Son of God, the Son of David, Satan, therefore, will provide his false Son of David to the world with the ultimate goal of luring Israel into a trap of their own device and misunderstanding of their ancient scriptures. From the scripture in Revelation, which provides an important clue to unmasking the identity of the coming false prophet that Jews would otherwise miss by not being familiar with the Christian New Testament, it's clear that this future second beast has the ability to draw down fire from heaven, exactly as the prophet Elijah did. What's more, whilst appearing as a lamb, which is to convey he seemingly speaks under the authority of God as a prophet of Israel, he's in reality a demonic possessed being speaking under the authority of Satan, the dragon, performing great and deceptive miracles while in the presence of the first beast, the Antichrist. In other words, the false prophet will completely deceive Israel into believing that the Antichrist is their Messiah, just as they will believe he is Elijah returned. If that's what happens, what is the actual meaning and fulfillment of the prophecy of Malachi about Elijah returning shortly before the day of the Lord? The actual truth of his fulfillment was supposedly told to us in Revelation chapter 11 and connected to the transfiguration event, for both Moses and Elijah shall return to the people of Israel during the tribulation period. As prophesied, these two witnesses are sent from heaven immediately after the Antichrist confirms a 7-year peace covenant with Israel, after which During the next 1,260 days, the two witnesses shall preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Jews during that time, telling the people of Israel they have just made a deal with the devil. Literally, Moses and Elijah will also display great supernatural power, counteracting the power from Satan that is given to both the Antichrist and his false prophet. Naturally, many Jews at that time, having just accepted the seemingly God-sent and admirable Antichrist, will believe these two witnesses, actually sent by God, to be evil, ascribing the supernatural and the godly power they display to be of satanic origin. In other words, good will be bad, and bad will be good in those days. I tell you now, that's already happening. Present tense. Right now. In a lot of cases, evil is being passed off as good, and good is being passed off as evil. It's a spaceman. More next on Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS.
I'm a spaceman. This is AVFS on Talk Radio, AM 640. This will be the final segment of tonight's show. So in the King James Version of the Bible, Revelation specifically informs us that the two witnesses have exactly 1,260 days. A nine, by the way, broken down in numerology. From the start of their testimony until it ends, until the Antichrist breaks the covenant of peace with Israel at the midpoint of the tribulation period of 1,260 days later from the day he confirmed it. It is this same 1,260th day that marks the end of the first 42 months of the Antichrist's reign of global peace, to culminate with the start of the Great Tribulation that is marked by great global destruction and war, in which 1,290 days are given mankind until the return of the Christ at Armageddon. At this midway point of that seven-year tribulation, the once godly and peaceful messianic figure Israel has spiritually taken in will suddenly turn satanic and evil, commanding his European forces to invade Israel and conquer Jerusalem, killing anyone in their path as they make their way toward the Third Temple. Once Israel has been contained, the Antichrist enters Jerusalem and finds the two witnesses outside of the entrance of the temple. Supernatural as they are, the scriptures declare that the two witnesses are no match for Satan himself and are murdered where they stand. After which the Antichrist enters the Holy of Holies and declares himself to be God. As the rest of the world celebrates the beast, Revelation 11, verse 11, says that it, as easily as those two towers of God fell, their destruction televised worldwide, I believe, the Holy Spirit will enter their bodies, and they shall rise up again 3 days later and ascend into heaven in the sight of all. It is after this event that the 144,000 are marked with the seal of God in their foreheads, and God's great wrath is then poured out on the earth in the form of angelic seals, trumps, and vials for the remaining 1,290 days. Now, knowing this, the very fact that Jewish people could ever become deceived into believing that a Gentile British king could ever become their Messiah in the first place proves that somewhere along the way the Jewish people have become completely beguiled by notions coming out of the British Israelism movement.
given us certain ancient Hebrew relics of antiquity will be found in the near future, I believe, and some archaeological dig that seemingly lends some credence to the Anglo-Israelist belief. There would also have to arise a near supernatural spokesperson claiming to be from God that taints traditional Judaism just enough to incorporate the British Israel infection, which in time will prove itself as part of those evil workings of Satan. As well with all this, this anti-Elijah false prophet being preaching the tenets of a British Israel lost tribes migration into the British Isles, he's also certainly going to present the British Antichrist King as fulfilling certain key ancient scriptures outlined only for that of Israel's true Messiah. You can find that in 1 Kings 11, verses 33 through 39, and Ezekiel 44, verses 1 through 3, Jeremiah 17, verse 25, and now Isaiah again, chapter 60, verses 1 through 11. All the supposed great miracles attributed to both the false prophet and the Antichrist will completely stun the world, and especially the relatively young Jewish state, who still struggles to find its national identity in an evil world that increasingly is becoming, well, against Israel's own right to exist, and that is already beginning to happen. Many Jews today see their present historical identity, or lack thereof, being intrinsically linked to three events, which have all three yet to be fulfilled. The Battle of Gog and Magog, the temple being rebuilt for the third time in Jerusalem, and the arrival of Elijah and their Messiah who brings them peace and security. Therefore, the spiritually corrupted New Age trend, with its occult teachers behind the promoting of these satanic serving ideas of British Israelism, masking themselves as everything from, well, Yair Devedi and Rabbi Avraham Feld at one end of the Anglo-Israeli spectrum, and the Celtic Knights of the KKK on the other end of that same British Israel belief system. Even Latter-day Saint Mormonism, touted as the fastest growing global religion, entirely based around the concept of the 10 Lost Tribes of Israel teachings. So, anyone speaking of such morality, bankrupt anti-Christian notions, such as the Satanic Templar doctrines of Anglo-Israelism, have in all reality placed themselves to be precursors to the false prophet and the anti-Elijah, because they already preach the same lie he will, in order to deceive the state of Israel into accepting the future British king as their Messiah. It is they who are doing the work for Satan and his Antichrist, even as they help complete the occult education of the world before their inevitable arrival. Beware of this demonic false doctrine. It is also often taught, financed, and propagated by radical white supremacist neo-Nazi factions. Today's Scottish Templars have become proactive in contemporary events. They've been granted special consultancy status with the UN, and their current project is to bring Jerusalem's Dome of the Rock under United Nations control. Meanwhile, they continue to keep an aloof silence about anything they please. Now, Daniel 11, 21, 23, 34, 39, 38 through 39, and then again Daniel 8, chapter, verses 24 through 25, and Daniel
chapter 9, verses 26 and 27, as well as Thessalonians and Matthew, all state, there shall arise a vile man, to whom they, the Jews, shall not give honor of the kingdom, the title of Messiah. But he shall come in peaceably and shall obtain the kingdom of Israel by lies, flatteries, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. He shall enter peaceably even upon the fattest places of the province, and he shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He'll scatter them among the prey, spoil and riches, and shall forecast the devices against the strongholds, even for a time. Yes, all of that that I spoke about tonight in those last couple of hours are seemingly right about to happen, or ripe to happen at any time now. Just a major event is all that's needed to cause this. It's been A View from Space, Talk Radio AM 640, Coast to Coast. Next, I'm Space, and I'm out.